It meant the world to me. You know, for the fans to show their appreciation, give me an ovation like that. You know, to be out on the floor with some of my former teammates, my brothers. You know, I got an opportunity to see Bobby and Masai, just all the people around. The first time was always special, and you don't forget that. The organization, they showed how classy they are, and they showed me, you know, that everything I did here had meant the world to them, just like vice versa.
Boy, what a way to start the week. Fan Morning Show. J.D. Bungus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. I think we all understood how Kyle Lowry's return was going to be an event, and that it was going to be an emotional night. It was going to be tribute-filled. And maybe it's just because I can be a little cynical at times, but I thought that with the thought of the potential Kyle Lowry trade last year that was weirdly handled, and the Denver Nuggets walks off and cries goodbye, 30-minute media conference with Blake Murphy and the likes of the rest of the Toronto Raptors media, basically a goodbye that doesn't happen, and then an off-season goodbye, and then sort of just multiple, will Kyle Lowry play in these games, should Kyle Lowry play in these games, no fans, just the amount of discussions that we had about Kyle Lowry, that maybe, just maybe, it wouldn't hit quite the way a normal return would hit for an athlete of that stature. But what an emotional night. What an emotional... I still feel, you know, when something... this is going to be a weird one. But when something almost happens to you, like you almost get hurt. Like you're almost in a car accident. Something happens like that. And you feel like that emotional instability for a little while afterwards where you go, oh my God, this could have happened. I still feel a little bit of that ripple effect after yesterday. Blake Murphy, you were down there. You went. It was the return of Kyle Lowry, but also the return of Blake Murphy. The media row was like, it was basically the Stone Cold music shattered. My God, what's he doing here? And he shows up. Blake Murphy's on the catwalk. How was it being back, sir?
Yeah, it was great. It was nice walking around courtside before the game and giving half the people hugs and half the people stunners. Yeah. It was great. The people who thought they were in my good books, and then I smash a coffee and pour it all over myself.
You're like, you're too good to wake up at 7 o'clock to come on our show? Stunner! I like that.
I did have to use that one a couple times because I got accused of being of big-timing them for not being at a lot of Raptors games. I'm like, look, I got to... If the Leafs and Raptors play, I got to double barrel those games, and mm-hmm. I got to be up at 5 a.m. and I got to prep a show. It's you guys who won't wake up before 10 a.m. to come hang out. No, it was great, though. It was really nice to see a lot of people. So the way credentialing works right now with pandemic stuff, I wasn't back of house, so I was just on Zoom for the Lowry presser, which was nice because it saves me from getting made fun of by Kyle Lowry. Like, he did the... Yep. He did the like checklist of make sure I make fun of each reporter once.
Yep.
So I avoided
the roast
that.
Of Toronto media. That's his. He's got a good move that way.
Yeah, but it was great. It was the Kyle Lowry stuff was really special. Cool to do some pregame stuff with Danielle and Will Liu and sit. This is the first time I ever sat in the Sportsnet 590 the Fan radio booth because Smith and Jones don't do it from there all the time, and I don't think we had the game last night. So Will Liu, just like that's like Will Liu's personal booth because he
that's
does
nice.
The post game show. Yeah, so I got to sit in there. That was cool. I got to catch up with some of the Raptors front office and things like that. Also entertaining before the game. So after Kyle's pregame presser, where he made it very very clear that he knew exactly how many threes Fred VanVleet needed to break his single season Raptors record.
Yeah.
Had a funny moment with Fred where like Fred was basically like, oh, I know the number two, like it's come. He didn't say it in those words, but you could tell it was coming from that conversation that they both knew. It was a lot of fun.
So I have a Fred VanVleet thought that I want to try to work out with you guys that's attached to the Lowry stuff, but I want to stick with just the feel of his return because, and this is something that I've thought about before. This is something that, again, when you're reflecting on Kyle Lowry's tenure with the Toronto Raptors, that it really does stick with you. We've always had these discussions of, like, is he the GOAT? Is he the greatest Raptor of all time? And, Blake, you did that really great feature before the game where you outlined the case. I I've never really understood the case against Lowry unless you are invoking the Vince Carter, what was his impact on actual reach in Canada.
And that's not greatest Raptor. That's most important Raptor.
Right. Exactly. Sure. And most important Raptor and greatest Raptor, you're right. Those are two very different conversations. But I even still believe that Kyle Lowry through the We the North era and then through the championship run actually had a greater reach than Vince Carter at the dunk contest. As cool as Vince Carter at the dunk contest was, I'm still sticking to the Raptors championship run, reaching more eyeballs and creating more fans.
You know what's cooler than winning a dunk contest? Winning an NBA championship.
Correct. Kawhi Leonard had the greatest season that a Raptor has ever had, but he is not the greatest Raptor of all time. To me, it is always Kyle Lowry. But what I've always thought about with Kyle is how there have been a lot of special athletes in this city, and the Raptors are a little bit different because they're sort of Canada's team in the way the Blue Jays are, whereas hockey, it's not the same, right? Like, as much as the Leafs are the largest team in Canada, you can't call them Canada's team. Like, you either hate the Leafs or you love the Leafs. So you can't have Darcy Tucker translate the same way nationally as Kyle Lowry translates nationally. So there is an advantage that the Raptors have. But every time we're reminded of the relationship between Kyle Lowry and the Raptors, where we're kind of forced to sit down and reflect on it like we were on Sunday evening, you just sit there and go, it's never going to be quite this way again with anybody. Because Kyle Lowry helped legitimize the Raptors, right? Like, there's this process of not only did he just resonate with the city in terms of being an identity player, he was this guy that perfectly fit in as how you felt overlooked. Like Kyle Lowry, the advanced stats guy that nobody ever thought was one of the best point guards in the NBA, or like maybe the best in terms of the top grouping of it, but he was never considered Chris Paul, right? Hey, Kyle Lowry, you can't really win with Kyle Lowry. Hey, if you watch him every night, you see everything he does, you catch him on an off night, you go, oh yeah, Kyle Lowry, I guess, is pretty good. Overlooked, chip on the shoulder, always over-delivering, and just knew, like, there's a connection there. There was just this real connection. And then you pair that with his ability to just do everything. And, yeah, like, his leaving town, if he had a poll where it was a popularity poll, what his approval rating was, it would have been unanimous. And the only other athlete like I could sort of equate it to is Roy Halladay. But Halladay even was different in the sense of there wasn't the success while he was here. And he had to kind of go to Philly to have it. But Kyle Lowry is just, there's no athlete that will ever, in my lifetime, quite have the relationship with this city and this country as Kyle Lowry. And it's kind of hard to explain it in its totality, but you saw it again that night where everyone in the building, everyone watching on television, would have felt something deep watching Lowry just give you a wave as his video tribute plays.
Yeah, and I have a lot of thoughts about the ability for the Raptors and the Raptors fan base and Kyle Lowry to kind of put aside the day-to-day and have that moment and appreciate it. Like, we don't get to see that for an active player a lot, other than kind of Kobe's goodbye tour season. I think it says a ton, and I want to ask Alvin Williams about this at 9:30 when we have him on. I think it says a ton about Kyle Lowry's growth as a person over the years that he allowed himself to have that moment and be appreciated, and it wasn't in a sarcastic way or a combative way. I thought it was great that I saw zero of the, oh, you shouldn't celebrate an opponent, like focus on the game kind of stuff. Nothing. Oh, no. Everyone knew what it was. Everyone knew how much it was going to mean to both sides. I thought the tribute was great. I thought the crowd was good. I thought Kyle's role in it was amazing. I got a huge kick out of like Bam and PJ Tucker and Jimmy Butler are like live posting all this stuff. Like, his teammates in Miami obviously care a ton about him too and know how much this means to them. Pascal and Fred were obviously fired up for it. But in terms of his connection, something Kyle said pregame really, really resonated with me in terms of, you're right, it's really hard to verbalize what he means to the fan base and vice versa. But he said, he got asked about establishing the culture in Toronto. He said, I think being a Raptor kind of just was who I was, right? Me, DeMar, we helped build something from who we were. Played hard, didn't care about anything but winning. And that's where it kind of continuously, gradually grew from. it wasn't like, oh, I want to be this. It's kind of who we were, and the organization took on our mold. And I think that that process is a difficult thing to capture and a difficult thing to verbalize. And you need a moment like last night. And sure, there's a huge DeMar component of this, and to a lesser extent, Dwayne Casey and JV and all those guys and stuff. But Kyle was the one who stayed through the winning. Kyle was the one who, you know, him ending up being an all-star caliber player changed the direction of the franchise. And yeah, I think that that idea that he didn't set out to be the GOAT, and we didn't even know what a GOAT would look like before Kyle Lowry came along, and we all just kind of defined these things as a fan base and as a franchise as it went along and built. And that's, you know, that's a really special thing. I don't think that happens very often.
Yeah, I think that the Raptors relationship, and by that I mean this country's relationship with Kyle Lowry, is just, it's very different from just about every relationship that a city has with a player. And it is especially different considering that Kyle Lowry is the greatest Raptor of all time, but if you rank the top, the relationships that I think about in basketball that are similar to this, you mentioned Kobe. I do feel like Toronto's relationship to Lowry is like Los Angeles with Kobe Bryant or Dallas with Dirk Nowitzki.
Yeah.
Like, and those two guys are not, like, top, I don't know, there's always debate about what Kobe is in terms of top players, but top 10.
But they're Hall of Famers. You can even,
right, like, exactly.
Just to lower the bar a little bit. They're Hall of Famers, yes. No doubt.
And I don't think that it takes anything away from Toronto that it's a player that is not of that stature that resonates the way that Kyle Lowry does. But yeah, it's pretty wild to think that that's it. Is like, you think about Larry Bird to Boston, and it's the same way with Kyle Lowry to Toronto. And yet, no basketball fan that's paying half attention to the Raptors would ever look at that through a critical eye, right? No one would ever look at Kyle Lowry and raise an eyebrow and say, why does this guy mean that much to Toronto? It's like, no, it just does. You can't equate him to those guys, to this city.
And I think that the specifics of that are really important to the connection. Like, the fact that Lowry wasn't drafted by the Raptors, he wasn't homegrown, he bounced around a bunch and was a guy without a home until he found Toronto.
Yeah.
I think that's huge. I think the fact that he was underappreciated nationally and even in his own fan base until, I want to say, 2016 nationally, when he had that huge series against the Heat and played well against the Cavs. And then, you know, in the own fan base, there was questions sometimes. I think all of that plays into it because the connection is really unique. It's not a guy who stepped in day one and was like, oh, I'm here for 20 years and we're going to have a ton of success uniformly and without stumbles. The stumbles that Lowry went through as a person and as a player and as the leader of this team so reflected the team's own, and look, Lowry's here for 9 years, but really that those 9 years really reflected the 25, 26 years of the franchise, right? Like, those struggles to get a foothold of being competitive and those struggles to get a foothold of being noticed nationally and all those things. So I think that's an important component of that. And it means that this is completely unreplaceable, right? Like, like, say Scotty Barnes ends up being the all NBA talent that the Raptors think he can be, and he plays his whole career in Toronto. He could end up having a case for being the best Raptor of all time, sure. But that Kyle Lowry connection, where the fan base, especially the hardcores who were with the Raptors for a long time, grew up with him and saw their own growth as basketball fans and as a basketball market reflected in Lowry's own success. And it culminates in this awesome championship season that still feels kind of magical and everything clicking into place. I don't think you see things like this very often.
So that resonance is something I want to talk about in regards to Fred and with this Raptors team in a second. But first, like, what did you guys just think about the tribute in general? Ailish, did you, like, they did it early. I wasn't expecting that necessarily. I didn't look at the game plan for what it was going to be, but oftentimes it's usually during the first time out. They'd opt to go with the, hey, fans, you better be in your seats because, hey, it's Kyle Lowry night.
Yeah, I thought the way that they did it was even more unique with the other team getting announced in. And then there's that pause and you knew that, okay, the familiar voice of the from North Philly to your city was going to do something special. And I think it was just, it was really, I got goosebumps watching it, but I was watching the broadcast for the full hour leading up to it. And I had already gotten a little bit of goosebumps watching everybody take some time to do video tributes, essay tributes, having, you know, some of our talent on the screen. So they completely, like, led up into this moment where that voice is going to have that moment again. And to see Lowry come out with his kids. I just thought it was all around just like an incredible production that they put on. For him to have that moment at center court, to stand there and have the crowd chanting his name. Like, the video itself was great, but it was kind of just like the atmosphere and the way that the crowd celebrated him. And you could see it. He just kind of stood there and like soaked it in. And for me, that was the most special moment when he put his hands up and waved. And like, it was just like, it was incredible the way that they did it. I liked the leading up. SportsCenter did an awesome job at like telling stories beforehand. So if you had an opportunity to watch the broadcast before the game, you're already emotional leading into the game. So I thought everything was perfect. I liked how much DeMar they put in the video too. I thought that was really special.
Yeah, I thought it was well done. The decision to do it pregame during the player intros was one so that they could get it on the broadcast, whereas if you do it at the first time out, it's during a commercial break usually. And two, they wanted more time and space for it, right? Like, you could do a timeout, it's capped a little bit. The funniest thing ever actually would have been Kyle Lowry getting a technical foul for delay of game from his own celebration. Yeah. Like, that would have been the perfect Lowry thing. But yeah, I thought it was great. I thought they hit the important notes. You know, it's one of those things where I even feel like post-game was part of it too. Like, he does the interview on the court, a bunch of the crowd stuck around, and I don't know if any of this made the broadcast or socials, but after he was done his on-court interview, before he did his like post-game scrum, he like went into the crowd. There were a ton of fans down at the bottom of the 100 section, and he went in there with them and was like posing for pictures and thanking them and stuff like that. And then you see on social after, like, all the photos of him and Masai, and
he takes
all
the game ball.
Yeah, he takes the game ball.
He holds on to it. But he holds it in a way where, like, he expects someone to come and try to take it from him always. Like, he's holding on to it like you would at a court where it's like, this is actually my ball, guys, and I'm sour that I'm done with the game and no one can come take it from me. I love the way he holds the ball.
I don't know if he was being facetious or not, but he said he actually got the ball for Chris Quinn because that was Chris Quinn's first career coaching win. Spoelstra was out due to health and safety protocols.
Listen, so Chris Quinn, I'm sure he actually did do that, but if Chris Quinn takes that basketball, he's a criminal. Right. Like, you can't have that ball. Like, so you can't have that ball, Chris Quinn. Okay, no offense. You can't have that ball. Okay, so I thought the tribute was phenomenal. I actually, it's funny, now I'm thinking about all these different ways that Blake, just from a media standpoint, you could have really played the heel of, wow, the Raptors over the top celebration, but also for a visiting player, time to move on, how many tributes. But the real, what is like, I was just thinking, could have had a strategical advantage by having it in the first quarter, like first time out, right? Lowry cries, it throws a little bit of the emotional imbalance off. You don't let them start the game, you reset it a bit. But at first, my actual thought was, wow, people aren't all in their seats yet. Like, the purpose of it being in the first time out is so that everyone can be there and everyone can kind of be settled and celebrate the moment. It was totally the right call. And I know that everybody can sometimes almost over-celebrate the way that the Raptors do things, right? Where it sounds like they're... We put them up on this pedestal like they're a different kind of organization, but I thought a moment like that totally was. You let Kyle Lowry be in the seats with his kids instead of with his teammates. And
if you're ever going to overdo it, that's the night to do it.
Exactly. It was just one of those things where I go, yeah, who cares? The fans, you didn't show up on time for Kyle Lowry night. There's zero. What, you're in the concourse trying to get chicken fingers? Kyle Lowry's on the court. Go sit down. I don't have any sympathy for anybody who would have missed that moment. I actually think that it's a little embarrassing that you wouldn't be in your seat knowing that it's getting close to tip-off and Kyle Lowry is going to be presented this way. I really thought the Raptors were class. And I think that those moments, Blake, that you're talking about where he goes into the stands and he's spending that extra time, you could see that Kyle Lowry, again, someone who is a cynical guy who doesn't necessarily love the limelight on him, right? He gets called the groat and he likes to push the groat away. I also appreciated that he really seemed to soak it in a little bit and that he got to enjoy some of the fruits of his labor. And that this is, I remember Kevin Durant talking on Bill Simmons's podcast after he left Oklahoma City. And very different, but he was really sour about Oklahoma City not caring about him anymore because he signed with the Golden State Warriors. And I'm kind of going, yeah, but Kevin, that's the game, man. You went to the team that knocked you out of the playoffs and you still want to be loved? It doesn't make any sense. The Raptors have I would say it's funny, like you always mention the stuff about Boston and how there's a rivalry with Boston. I think of that way more with the Heat. Like the Heat had Dragic, they had that game 7 in the postseason where it was just an up and down real moment for the Raptors franchise in terms of were these guys going to be able to actually do it in the playoffs. I've just Heat culture versus Raptors culture. Mm. There's always been these parallels between the two organizations. The Bam Adebayo hit on Fred VanVleet.
And now the Bam Adebayo hit on Scottie Barnes
last night.
There's also an element of, like, you look at the Heat team and you, like, they're the only team that makes you feel how other teams probably feel about the Raptors, where it's like Max Strus and Caleb Martin and guys like that, and he didn't play last night, but Gabe Vincent, those guys, like, give you the business. And you're like, where do you get these guys from? How do you find them? And then you look at the Raptors side, it's like, oh, that's what it feels like.
So, but Kyle Lowry went and signed with that team. Mm-hmm. He wanted to be with Miami. It was kind of an open secret in the NBA that he wanted to be there last year as well, that Jimmy Butler was there. He wanted to be with his friend. He wanted to be in Miami. And there's zero resentment. That kind of love a player appreciates. Kyle Lowry has been in the business long enough to have seen the way that a guy goes from one city to another, and there is a shift in some of the fans in Blake. The fact that there was not one person, at least that I saw, or one take of a person that had the Lowry gets the overrated or something along those lines, that's so special.
I didn't
see
a single one, and I get some very dumb tweets.
So special, so unique, so incredible, and a guy like Lowry has the intelligence to appreciate it. He's been around long enough, he can understand it, he took it in, and he showed that love back because the love between the two sides is very real, right? You don't have to worry about Kyle Lowry that way. That's why we don't care that he's in Miami, is because everybody knows that we're Kyle Lowry's city. You know, there's no inferiority complex that this fan base normally has with somebody. He is our guy. And we are his city.
I think there's another component here, too. And it maybe didn't come off last night because they lose the game or whatever. But a big part of this for me, and I hope for the rest of the fan base, and I think it's true, is it's easy to appreciate Lowry going elsewhere, too, because he unquestionably, more than any other Toronto Raptor, left the franchise better than he found it.
Okay.
And that's such a huge thing where he gets here, and again, I went over this stuff already, but the kind of being lost in the wilderness and trying to find your way as a franchise and as a player, and then he leaves, and not only are they legitimized, not only do they have a championship, but he knew. He talked about it yesterday. He knew Pascal and Fred were ready to take over the reins. And JD, we talked a bunch last week about how, hey, can those guys truly take over the team until Kyle Lowry moves on? And it's kind of that passing of the torch. And we had that great conversation with CJ Miles last week where he said, no, Kyle's still there. He's still in that locker room. And then, you know, some of the parallels are just so obvious where, like, him and Fred are, like, wrestling on the court. Like, Fred had him in a sleeper hold at one point during one of the breaks. And then Fred goes out and breaks the single season record. But Kyle got asked, too, pregame, and this is an interesting parallel, is he got asked to compare this year's Raptors team to 2013-2014 when the Raptors first started getting good. That's the year they go to the playoffs against the Nets and it comes down to game 7 and they surprise everyone. And he said that that team in 2013-14, like, they were getting better, but it was mostly just they tried really hard. And he said, quote, this team is way better than we were.
Yeah.
And this is a team that could win 47 or 48 games, which at that point would have been a franchise record. And yeah, they're a little ahead. And I think that's a component of this, is Kyle's imprint is still there on this team. And the team's in a really good place post-Lowry. Like, everyone has managed this exit and transition really, really well.
So this leads into, again, the thought that I had about Fred last night. But do we have any other thoughts on Kyle Lowry right now? Again, we're going to have Michael Grange later this morning. Boy, it's Monday.
I'm not doing 12 hours, man.
maybe we are. It's just a different show. We have Michael Grange on stage later today. No, he's coming up at 8 o'clock. We have Alvin Williams at 9:30. But any closing thoughts on actual Lowry last night? Anything from the two of you? Okay. So, Fred comes out last night like a demon out of hell. He wants to show Lowry the ultimate respect by going at him as hard as he possibly can. Breaks the record immediately and drops, I believe, 16 points in the first quarter. 17 points in the first quarter. Bat out of hell. Incredible. Incredible start for Fred. And it sat with you, though. We've known for a while that he was chasing this Lowry record, right? And it was a big story going into this game. And yet, when he hits it, you kind of have this moment of, huh, Fred's been here a little while. Like, Fred's been on this team for a bit. You don't break Lowry's record. You're not – Fred's not a third-year player anymore. Fred's not a fourth-year player anymore.
He's going to pass Mo Pete for second all-time in career threes as a Raptor later this week, probably.
Exactly. He's been here. And Fred and this Raptors team, because I think we all agree – I think we would all agree that one of the most special things about that relationship is exactly what you said, Blake, is so many times culture gets overstated. And we had that moment even with the DeMar DeRozan trade where we went like, oh, the family element of this thing can be overstated at times. And it's not always, it's a family, it's a family, it's a family. It is ultimately a business. But the culture that the Raptors have cultivated is very, very real. And that they have had this perfect kind of passing of the torch at exactly the right time. And yeah, it probably does feel a little bit different with Lowry in Miami and all this different stuff. If the Heat are in first place and the Raptors are in the cellar and you're looking at this going, boy, what are the Raptors going to be moving forward? What's the direction of this franchise moving forward? No. They have that identity and they have that through players like Siakam, OG. And we talk about getting the most out of players. I really do believe that that is part of the Raptors culture that Kyle Lowry bought and instilled here or helped instill here, is that you have a confidence that when you acquire talent, because ultimately you still have to have talent. You're not just like, there's a reason why certain players haven't worked out in this culture, and it's because they're just frankly not good enough. So you have to have good players, but getting the most out of the good players when you get them here is very much a Raptors thing, and I believe it is partially a Lowry thing. So Siakam, OG, and Fred, specifically, the guys that played with Kyle, I think we would all acknowledge that they would not be who they are today without having played with Lowry. That being said, I'm always curious about these guys trying to kind of stake out their own identity, and it's something that we talked about with CJ about Siakam taking that emergence as a player and whether he could have a little bit more ownership of his team. But the reason why I thought about Fred specifically in that game is, well, one, he comes out and has that record and he has that moment, and so he becomes a little bit higher in the storyline ranking. But also just how Fred is so much more tied to Kyle because of the stature, because of the attitude, the way that the two play. They have this real connection where the fan base has sort of gone and said, well, we've gone from Kyle to Fred, and that is the natural progression of things. But Fred can never reach the stratosphere that Lowry was in, right? Because of the reasons that we just outlined with Kyle Lowry. Fred's also not as good of a player as Kyle Lowry was, but even still, he's having a terrific season. He makes an all-star team. This is a very, very good Fred year. And I thought about how... what would Van Vliet need to be able to kind of stake out his own legacy that is independent from Lowry? Because that is the one drawback for him personally, is like, this is a guy with a chip on his shoulder. This is certainly a guy who is an undrafted free agent, but you mentioned it earlier, Blake. Part of Lowry's legacy was that he was overlooked and he wasn't really fitting in, and so the Raptors kind of became this place where they were the organization where he could be him. And maybe that doesn't happen with Fred VanVleet in other places. Maybe it does. But that everything about Fred always kind of comes with the sentence of, like, if it's the lead, that he's the Lowry protege, and how much he wants to stake out and just be his own person and kind of have his own legacy that isn't tied to Kyle Lowry, and how difficult it's going to be from him to kind of break away from that over time.
It's certainly something that we'll have an eye on as it gets contextualized, right? And I think it's something that it's going to take time. And there are a couple things he can do to get away from that. And the first is, Kyle's not here anymore. So if this team overperforms as they have and they have some success in the playoffs or take a big chunk out of a top seed or something like that, and then next year they're even better, you know, there are going to be seasons that Fred has as the 1B here that don't have Kyle attached to it. There's also the component of longevity, where I just mentioned that he's about to become second all-time in three-pointers as a Raptor. He's already top 10 in steals, in assists, in points. He has the potential, him and Siakam, because they came in at the same time, if those guys stick around, like Kyle and DeMar are all over the leaderboards because they stuck around in large, but they were obviously very good, but also just like nobody else stayed. Like, the records belong to like Morris Peterson before.
Yep.
because you just hang around long enough to move up the chart. Even like Chris Bosch only played 500 games here. So I think it's nuts
to think about. When you say that, you go, pardon me.
Yeah, and Pascal's already almost at 400. Like Pascal's been here almost as long as Chris Bosch already. Fred's a little further behind because he didn't play much that rookie year. Yeah. But again, 10th all time in Raptor scoring. Like that's going to be his and Pascal's key from here. And you're right. I think it applies more to Fred than Pascal because Pascal's journey to become an all NBA guy has kind of been its own thing.
Have any different statures of Lowry and Siakam. It's like one guy has all the physical gifts in the world. The other guy you look at and you go, where would he get picked if he just showed up at a random run in Philly today? Like, and people didn't know who he was.
And look, let's be honest. I don't think even if 2-3 years down the line, Fred is still getting the Kyle connections, I don't think that's a terrible thing because the commentary wouldn't be, oh, he was like a 90% version of Kyle and they kept a Kyle-like guy. It would be, no, this is what Kyle and DeMar built, and Fred was the guy that the organization and guys like Kyle and DeMar entrusted to carry that forward. And suddenly what was an 8 or 9 year culture is now a 20-year culture, a 15-year culture. I think that would be a huge compliment to him anyway.
Yeah, you know, I think that you can look at it a little bit like almost, it's funny, the Raptors are like a national program where it's you're picking up the legacy after the players leave.
And right, Emile Jefferson's an assistant coach on the bench for Duke now, even though thought he was still playing.
Yeah, just but you kind of have this rollover from one thing to the next. And no, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, and that's why I think I set this up as it's an idea I really kind of want to flesh out, but every person wants to be their own person at some point. And it's not that Fred isn't that, but there is just a little bit of even last night where I go, man, this is a really special night for Fred. And it would have been a little different, I think, had the Raptors actually won and Van Vliet carries them down the stretch to beat Lowry, and that it really does still end up a Lowry moment, right, where he's making all the right plays at the end of the game. And you're reminded that as the Raptors are pressing and he's inbounding the ball, that he's one of the better guys at that, like the most trustworthy players in the NBA, just at little things. Again, it's little things that you appreciate with Lowry because of him being here, but just simply how it's a night that could have been more about Fred still stays about Lowry. And when are those moments going to come where it's about Fred? And you know when they are? It's now, starting in the postseason. Like, this is going to be it.
If he had hit that three at the end of the game. Maybe
that one when they were down 4 and they thought the game was over and Nurse didn't use the timeout. And then
I would have bet my life that was going in, by the way. Mm-hmm. I would have, like, if you froze the, like, just time and you would have said, JD, would you like to now empty the account into Fred hitting this shot, I would have said, oh, absolutely. There's absolutely no question. That was shocking to watch that not go in, and that just shows you the trust that people already have in Fred VanVleet when it comes to being clutch. Do you guys think Scotty should have just gone up with it, though? Like, I know the three was more important, but he was down there, and I kind of went, Scotty, just go up. You're 6'9", and I don't even know how many pounds, but you're right there at the basket. You're going to get an easy quick two and then press again. Either way, I think that the Raptors are in a phenomenal position. Even again last night, they're playing this Miami Heat team that is at the top of the Eastern Conference and is geared to be winning. And I sit there the whole game and I texted Blake and I said, this is kind of the team you want. You could take this team in a 7-game series. Like, don't you guys think the Raptors could beat them in 7?
Yeah.
I think that game was close last night. And I didn't think the Raptors played anything close to their best defensive game. I actually thought they were pretty inattentive with, or not inattentive, but they were fairly mistake prone with Tyler Hero especially. But I was not super impressed with that side of the ball last night. I think that playoff series would be a grind.
Oh yeah, no, that was I tweeted that, but the spin for me last night was, now you could certainly not play the Heat in the first round. And, yeah, I wasn't ready to watch Kyle Lowry in a playoff series against Fred. Because that was fun last night where you go, hey, we're in a good spot. You're in a good spot. Everyone's happy in the breakup and everything's looking good. You show up in the first round for a playoff series and Kyle Lowry's hitting daggers. I don't know how people are going to feel. It's still very, very awkward. I don't want to have that experience quite just yet. But that the Raptors are this far ahead of scheduling is nuts. It really is. It's really a testament to so many different players, so many people within the organization, and again, Kyle Lowry himself, that they are a five seed, but really the or like they sort of they dropped to six last night, right? They dropped to six, so they're the six seed. But really, I think we all agree they're the natural five seed. But a five seed that could probably beat any of the top fours in what are all in championship seasons for those top four teams. Let's take a break. It's A-list time. We have updates on big stories and big rivalries. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590 Fan. The saga that is Eric Church, which I have brought up multiple times during the A-list, it just keeps going.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm like you said, there was an Eric Church update this morning, and I went. It was like I was getting a new season of my favorite show. So let's do this.
It's the second most important thing from the weekend.
Yeah.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
So your Sparks notes of what's been going on with Eric Church. If you haven't been listening, subscribing, and downloading, and giving five stars to the podcast, and missing the A-list, Eric Church was supposed to have a sold-out concert and decided to cancel it last minute to watch the UNC Duke game. As a lifelong fan, he said he was got to cheer on the Tar Heels. He had to cancel last minute. Obviously, the fans were outraged. Lots of people had plans to come in. This was in San Antonio. People were flying in, putting their receipts of their trip, their weekend plans, and Eric Church was not a fan favorite at that point. He goes to the game. He takes some time to think about his actions, what he had done. And he has now decided to put on a free concert down the road for all fans who had bought tickets before, which is very, very nice and very, very expected when you cancel a concert. But he was currently, before, was supposed to play at the AT&T Center, which holds 19,000 fans. And now he will be having his concert at the Whitewater Amphitheater, which only holds 5,600 people. So the drama of who gets to go to a very small concert in September will be, I'll recircle this conversation on September 2nd when he has decided to postpone the concert for. But initial thoughts of the, okay, we're going to do this, but oops, we're not doing it as good as we should.
I am confused by something. Is Darius Rucker like opening for him or something on this?
Well, that's
concert?
Next in the A-list.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Stay tuned.
Then so, I have no thought then.
I have a thought. One is that this is the most justified action that anyone has ever done in the history of humanity, because he got to see that win.
Humanity.
This is the most paid off. Imagine being him, knowing that you kicked over $1 million out of your pocket, and
but you got to see that Caleb Love pull up three.
Right, but like imagine you lost and you lost to Duke. You're down over $1 million and all your fans are pissed in your home state. That's a lot to take on. And instead, he's got that W. He probably placed a little wager down on his squad. That's a lifetime. If you could basically pick, I would think that is a, if I could be a fan of any team, like a real dyed-in-the-wool fan to that degree, if I could pick any moment in my lifetime to be a fan of a team and be there for this, I think there's a real case to be made for you would want to be a UNC fan at that game. Like, the anxiety of potentially losing the Coach K last game at Cameron Indoor, because that was such a win for North Carolina, right? They were heavy underdogs. They went into Cameron. They beat them in front of all their alumni and all the fans that paid thousands of dollars. And now here's Duke's chance to basically wash that all away and go to a championship game. And you've never played in a Final Four. You two teams have this like incredible legacy and this incredible rivalry. But here's this one thing that's been building for years and years and years. And then you win that game. You send Coach K packing. Duke doesn't shake hands. Eric Church, like, full round of applause for you, buddy. You did it. You did the damn thing. Who cares? If you're playing for 5,000 free fans, who cares what the other, 10,000 people that don't get in? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You're winning the PR battle. You're winning hearts and minds by giving up free shows. You're going to go in there with your UNC stuff. I hope he shows up to that show decked out in UNC championship gear and goes, I regret nothing. Now we're playing the songs. Rock me, Bubba. You know, like, let's go. 1, 2, 3, 4. I love it. I love everything about it.
All we need to top it is so Leaky Black, the kid who played 40 minutes for all 40 minutes for North Carolina.
All-time defensive performance by a kid.
Also a senior who's from North Carolina.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's into Eric Church, but we got to get that kid on
he
stage.
He will be now.
It's at least got to be a Leaky Black jersey that Eric Church comes out in.
Yeah, it'll be an entire event. Maybe he'll sell merch with the team's logo. But there's 13,400 people that won't be able to make it, so stay tuned September 2nd. I'll let you know what happens with that story.
Well, those 13,000 people, you can kick rocks. Life isn't fair. Like, you don't always get everything you want.
Kick rocks.
No, but for real, like, honest to God, this guy's going to play for 5,000 people, and if you can't understand what this means to this guy and what he wanted to do, like, I don't know. At some point, you just kind of look at it and go, yeah, you know, shoulder shrug. That's what happens. I've had times where, like, I went to John Mulaney twice, and both times I showed up at the arena, and there was a sign on the door that he wasn't there, like, that he wasn't going to be performing tonight. Like, the idea of a concert getting canceled is not this isn't the first time an artist has ever canceled a show for a reason that a fan didn't agree with. So I kind of look at it and go, hey, he canceled it for the right reason. He got his right reason. What do you guys think about that? If you could drop in, you could be a fan of a team. Because I thought, like, Canada beating the United States at the Olympics this last time, so big. But that's every 4 years guaranteed, right? That they're going to be doing that, and then there's World Championships. I thought about Yankees, Red Sox. But again, you're in the same division. Playing in the postseason is kind of comes with a regularity. The fact that these two teams, it's so difficult for them to meet because they're always so highly seeded, that for them to make a run and to face each other in this tournament really does
literally
require
the
them
first time ever they've played exactly. Each other, what, 110 times, and it's the first time that that's happened in the tournament, let alone the Final Four.
That's why I think it's number one. That's why I think this is kind of number one in my lifetime anyways. I can't equate this to things that happened before I was a sports fan because I have no context for them. But for me anyways, this was the like number one rivalry moment in my life in terms of a fan base getting one over on the other. That was special, special, special. Do you guys have anything that you would even equate it to that I didn't kind of reference there?
Yeah, I mean, the 2004 Red Sox overcoming the Yankees is a pretty big one, but I wouldn't want to put myself in that situation. Like, having to, like, I love the Dropkick Murphys, but having to be a Boston person for that run wouldn't have been, the juice not worth the squeeze there.
Boston comes through so deep.
I have a friend who's like a lifelong North Carolina fan. He texted me on Saturday. He's like, is it possible to die of happiness? Yeah. That's how big a deal that rivalry is to those UNC people. So that's a good one. I don't have one off the top of my head.
The only ones that I could think of were obviously the Canada-USA women's hockey. Canada wins 4 consecutive gold medals, and then USA wins in 2018 in Pyeongchang. Kind of took the momentum out of Canada's sails. But the other one was the Capitals and the Penguins. They could never beat Crosby in the playoffs. They could never beat the Penguins when it mattered. And then they eliminate the Penguins in 2018 and go on to win the cup. And Ovi swims in the fountain. So that would be it for me.
Ovi swims in the fountain. It's true. Yes, Ovi did swim in that fountain. That is a good one. That is a really good one. It's just like, for me, again, it's like you're a Penguins fan a Washington Capitals fan. You didn't grow up with like generations of people in your house. Like if you lived with your grandparents and your parents in the house, like the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory situation here where everyone's under one roof, you'd have multi-generations of people who hate Duke. Like, you always kind of pass that along, right? It's just incredible. So, yeah, Blake, the dying of happiness thing is just so true, so true. I'm envious of North Carolina fans. Like, I was rooting for North Carolina, trying to, like, draft off of their emotion. It's not the same. What's next?
Okay, so the reason that I played Darius Rucker in is he's getting a lot of positive interaction with his passion for the South Carolina women's basketball team, who obviously last night won the title. He had tweeted that if the team won the championship, he would have a free party and show at the Horseshoe, which is a local establishment. And last night, with them winning the national championship, it's happening. He's going to have a big free party at the Horseshoe in Columbia. He's going to have a big old party to celebrate the girls, and also the fact that he's a South Carolina fan his whole life. He's got a tattoo on his arm. He's
I assume he went there.
Yeah. So really awesome story. And that's how you do it. That's how you get fans and celebrate basketball. So he's kind of putting one to Eric Church.
I like the idea that he's putting it to Eric Church. I like how Eilish is basically setting it up.
There's
like
a rivalry now.
Yeah, she's like,
but maybe
hey,
Eric Church will partner with him really at the game.
No, yeah, his tattoo is massive on his arm. It's funny with Americans because he is from South Carolina. He's from Charleston. And I'm a big Darius Rucker guy. I don't know if he actually went to that school, because that's something that you're allowed to do in the States, is even if you don't go to the school, you can kind of sell.
Like,
if you're from the town and you're a big fan of the team, you can get a tattoo and people won't think twice about it, right? Like, not all the North Carolina fans went to UNC. Like, they're just – they lose it. They pick their side. They pick their team. So, yeah, great move. But obviously, why wouldn't you want to? If you had that ability, imagine you were that good, like you were Darius Rucker level of a talent, and you could just at a whim decide, hey, I'm doing a party at a bar and I'm going to play and everyone's going to celebrate and I'm going to make this party amazing. Like, what a – to not do that, Eilish, is a bigger story, you know, to not want to be a part of the party and throw a party for the Gamecocks.
So I have a little throwback here. Almost 30 years ago, he did this same thing as Hootie and the Blowfish for the South Carolina football team, just getting to their first winning season in the SEC after they moved.
I love it.
That's awesome.
Darius Rucker, party machine. What's next?
Big women's basketball fan. Okay, so this is a feel-good story that proves that if you put your heart and soul into something, you can be successful. Adam Aller, who is an Oakland A's member, has quite the story of his success. So he was a 20th round pick. He was released by the Pirates. He had quite the season from back in 2016. Plays with the Giants, almost quits playing baseball altogether, plays in the Frontier League, ends up going to play overseas in Australia, eventually ends up with the Mets on a minor league Rule 5 draft, ends up being traded to Oakland. So he's had quite the suitcase, never successful story. In the meantime, while playing minor league ball, he had to find other sources of income because he wasn't able to make ends meet, including being a substitute teacher, a valet parker, working at Home Depot, becoming a bartender. The list goes on.
This guy sounds like me in my blogging days.
He's now made the Oakland A's opening day roster. Beautiful. Beautiful story.
Yeah,
you got to cheer for this guy.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of the R.A. Dickey story. Mm-hmm. Is that if you really love baseball and you really grind it out, you can spend a long time chasing that dream, right? Like, and that makes me also think about how they're changing the minor leagues moving forward, right? And this whole discussion about how many minor league players you can have and the impacts on, it really does change the potential for people's dreams. That is great, though. Again, perseverance. When is that a bad thing, right? And doing – it's a lesson for all of us. It's like, hey, guess what? Your dreams might not happen overnight. We live in kind of the overnight culture, right, where people can have success immediately through a TikTok. It doesn't always operate that way, and maybe it does take some time, but you can eventually end up there. Maybe it just took time for William Nylander. Maybe he's just, taking a little bit of time.
He's the Adam Aller route.
He's the Adam Aller. He's the Adam Aller of the Maple Leafs. Leafs are hot. Leafs are rolling. Leafs are playing the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight. What's the one thing you want to see against the defending back-to-back Stanley Cup champions? That's next on the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Blake and Ailish, Sports 590 The Fan.